Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
What is up, people of the internet? Welcome back to another episode of the Waveform Podcast. We're your hosts. I'm Marquez.
And I'm Andrew.
And Tesla wants you to sit in a wet dumpster while your car charges.
You're just going straight through? Yeah, why? Like, okay.
Just jumping right in.
Well, just in case you're wondering what else we're going to talk about today, we are later going to talk about the Pixel 6a possibly having a higher refresh screen, and we're going to talk about how you might be seeing more ads on your Apple devices. But yes, I have a lot of quick hits in here, and I guess you've picked which one you want to talk about.
I just read the first bold text in the doc. Yeah, I don't know. I have to talk about this. It's a dumpster with Tesla written on the side of it. So they actually did think this through a little bit. Apparently there are going to be, and I don't know where this is.
It's in Germany.
Oh, so
there's one in Germany. No.
Okay. There's one in Germany where, you park to charge a supercharger and there's a pool next to the superchargers.
Yes.
And you can just hang out in the pool while you charge, which so many weird things about this. First of all, I always find it funny when you advertise things you can do that happen when you take a long time to charge, like the Ioniq 5. We just got done testing it and we're working on a video with it. It has a driver's seat that reclines all the way back and has a footrest to kick up.
That's why, if
you are charging for an hour and a half on some random slow charger, you want to at least be comfortable.
Okay.
And so you can do that. But ideally, you're only at a Tesla supercharger for like half an hour. Do you have time in half an hour to change, get into a bathing suit, swim around, change back, dry off, potentially shower, continue on your road trip? I guess, maybe.
I'm not totally sure. It seems like a stretch. Just to describe this a little bit for audio listeners too, it's like, it is a dumpster, not quite the one you'd find like behind a McDonald's or like outside of a building that you throw trash in. It's more of the one you would get if you were like cleaning out your house or like doing a renovation that you would rent and it would come on the back of a truck.
So you're saying like a nice dumpster, like a kind of decent.
In lesser words, I guess that's what I'm saying, but not exactly my sentiment. It is funny though. It's painted. It says Tesla on the side. It is both over and under engineered if we're considering this a pool. It looks like it has stairs into it. It looks like it has a pool cover, but it also just has like cones and caution tape around it and like a hose just dangling in with water. So yeah, if you want to cool off, it says it's up to 4 people. I think you could probably fit more in there, but you know,
that's really funny.
Maybe there's some safety issues with it if you go more than 4. It also looks like it's just on like a construction lot. Like there's like temporary stairs behind it.
It looks fine empty. But if I came up to the supercharger and plugged in and I looked over behind the chargers and there was like 3 people in a dumpster, I wouldn't even think about getting into that dumpster with people. But then again, what other chargers can you swim around?
Fair. They're revolutionizing the game. I like also the article had just a couple really funny lines. I'm just going to throw one out there that was too golden not to talk about. Quote, apparently it's meant for 4 occupants, assuming there are 4 people who fit the cross-section of wealthy enough to own a Tesla and likes to sit in wet dumpsters.
It's just calling it dumpsters.
Brilliant. Man. It's fantastic. My next quick hit here I have is, remember the Polestar 02, their like roadster concept?
This is the one we talked about when we first saw the video of the drone flying off the back of the Polestar concept. Okay, yes, I remember this.
Yeah, what do you, like, I feel like what I mostly remember about it is the drone and just that like, I really digged how it looked. I thought it looked really sharp.
Yeah, the aesthetic of the Polestar is definitely the thing that was most notable to me. I love the thing. It looks amazing. The specs, I think we are actually getting a little bit more information on. So
I do have 3.2 seconds, 0-60. So clearly, if like we want to immediately compare this to the Roadster, slower.
Right. Well, yeah, Tesla Roadster. I don't know. Yeah. There's no price, right? for this?
Not that I know of. The main thing I wanted to talk about here is, and the reason it's in the news is because it says they set a release date for 2026, which I found really interesting. I don't think we've had something that's had like that far out of the. Is it safe to say in the EV world, we're way more used to seeing a within 1 year release date and seeing that being delayed rather than like right. giving themselves the buffer?
Yeah, we get the promise of one thing
yeah.
and it's usually like 2-3 years away. Like I'm seeing some 2024 promises, maybe 2025 as far as individual models.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have companies going, we'll have some electric stuff by 2030 and you don't really know what it is. But as far as this car that you can see here, not coming for another 4 years, that's kind of a while, but maybe under promise, over deliver is their way to go.
I would like to think that. I have one other, and it could be both, one other theory on this. And is it potentially just we had a really, really good first news release and like it did really well. Like our clip of it did awesome. People were really interested in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Is it like, oh, this died down a little bit? You know, it's a while away, but let's throw a release date out there. Let's get in the news cycle again. It kind of almost reminds me, while still way too far away, of like the Apple purple iPhone, like another shot in the press in the news cycle, or like a new OnePlus color news cycle refresh.
Yeah, you know my read on this?
Yeah.
My read on this is they made the concept video and never had any intention of making the car, but it was received so well that they said, you know what? Let's try to make it. And so they're going to need a couple years of R&D to actually get started with this. And now they're going to try to make one.
I like that. I have two questions for you, pure speculation questions.
Sure.
One, do you think it has the drone attached to it? Or give me a percentage of how likely is it to have the drone?
So there's 0% chance it works exactly how we saw it in the video. But will they like find a way to build a drone into the car? Maybe. I'd give that a 30% chance.
I was going to go 20.
Yeah.
I have pretty low expectations for that. Next question. Do you think this comes out before the Tesla Roadster, or which do you think comes out first?
Wow. Well, the Roadster was announced in 2017. I think the Tesla Roadster comes out before this.
I agree.
Because Tesla's theoretically further along in R&D, I mm-hmm. think, maybe. And I also have a lot of people's money. And so maybe there's theoretically some lawsuits that could start to creep up if they don't deliver a car. Like, it's been now, what has it been, 5 years since they took the money promising something in 2020?
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone's eventually going to get mad enough to say something, right? So, yeah, maybe a little bit extra pressure to Tesla.
I think that's funny. So, like, my thought on this was, I do think Tesla Roadster comes out first, but if it doesn't, that means it will be going on close to 10 years since they've taken payments.
Well, yeah, if they go all the way to 2026,
yeah,
that's, I've never seen anything like that in the car world. I mean, there's crazy stuff in the exotic world where it's like, yeah, I ordered the Koenigsegg Jimera when I just saw like one working prototype and I gave Koenigsegg $1 million and I'll get the car in a decade. But that's $1 million. That's for a different type of human where there's this weird, like Tesla Roadster cult that's like, when's this car coming out? It's got to come out soon, right? We don't know. Yeah, no, we'll see. But I do like the Polestar idea. I'm excited for it.
I love the look of this. I like really sharp lines. So I really like the like
Polestar
boxy
is all sharp lines.
It's really nice.
Polestar is nice.
We'll see. I do like that it's also like, it is Polestar who has some cars out already. Like this is not a total, I could see like, one of these totally random companies we've warned people about saying 2026. And I don't think that's interesting as a headline, but this is like a car company that's making cars already giving a 4 to 5 year time, which is interesting.
It's like, what's the craziest thing about making this car? Like it's a convertible two-door EV, which we haven't seen any, correct me if I'm wrong, we haven't seen any convertible EVs with long range, right? All of the like decently long range EVs are very aerodynamic and not convertibles.
If there's one, it's like a very specific one. And, you know, it's not one of the main ones we talk about all the time.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's always someone who finds something.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a couple two-door EVs out there. It's not that crazy to decide to make a 3.2 second 0 to 60 EV in 4 years. You could make that today.
Yeah.
So, I don't think this is the craziest promise ever. I think the Roadster is such a crazy promise that people are just like, yeah, it's never happening. So I wouldn't be shocked if Polestar over delivers on this one.
Hopefully.
But we'll see.
Fingers crossed.
A convertible I've never seen a long-range EV convertible, and I'm very curious what type of stuff that does to your range. Can't be that good. Can't be good.
Haven't thought of that. I'll be excited to see it. And quickly, last hit of the day of this episode is, of course, it's EV related again, but we had a tweet this morning about, so it seems like the Tesla app accidentally pushed forward a new tab about Tesla memberships and then took it back. So we're going to, everyone's assuming this is potentially memberships for non-Tesla EV supercharging network.
Yeah, which has been rumored, and I've seen probably at least once a month someone going, it's happening. Mm-hmm. They're going to open up superchargers for non-Teslas, and then it's just quiet and it doesn't happen. I'm like, what are you talking about? I have a non-Tesla EV. I'm waiting for it to be real. Let's see it. When I finally saw it, we saw another tweet this morning.
Yeah.
Breaking. Tesla has announced this membership program. I'm like, sure. I hope so. And then I look in my app and it's not there. And I'm like, I don't believe you. But it turned out this was potentially an accidental publish, maybe with a typo in it. Mm-hmm. So what we observed was a screenshot that showed two tiers. One, pay per use. So pay as you go supercharging. You get access to the supercharger network. Or two, membership. 99 cents per month. And you secure lower price per kilowatt hour.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 99 cents a month sounds amazing. And when this disappeared from the app like an hour later, we suspected that might have been a typo that they need to fix.
Yes.
Might supposed to be $9.99 a month.
Yeah. So let's start with I think the main assumption, and for most people here, is just that this is, like we said, for non-Tesla EVs being able to use the supercharging network. And the reason we kind of think that is we're already seeing that in Europe. That is a thing in Europe already. And because Tesla applied for funding from the government to expand the supercharging network. And to do that, their network has to be available to more than one manufacturer.
Which is hilarious that it just says more than one.
Yeah, that's what the one article I was reading from like Electric said it has to be open to more than one manufacturer. So there's also
two or more.
Yeah, I mean, assuming that's going to mean everyone, because that should mean
CCS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so that's what we think is going to happen. The 99 cents a month, a lot of people think is a placeholder. In comparison to rates in Europe, it's approximately $12 USD a month. So like $9.99 sounds much more reasonable there, or anything 99 per month. I don't think 99 cents a month is going to be that. But other than that, I saw one other theory that this might be, and that is that this actually isn't even for non-Tesla EVs, that because nowhere on the page does it say that, right?
That's true.
It says membership. Mm-hmm. This could potentially just be a membership for Tesla owners for using the supercharging network, and maybe could combat the rising price of electricity in the future by getting lower price per kilowatt hour.
Yeah, and that is also very possible, and I think it could be interesting to see. Basically, you're going to have to do a calculus of like how many supercharger miles do you drive to see if it's worth it for you or not. Me personally, lately, I only use superchargers when I do road trips. And if I look at my charging history for the past like 8 months, since like January of this year, I've only done like one road trip where I use a supercharger. Hmm. So I would definitely not pay $9.99 a month for the membership. I would do pay as you go.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was somebody who does like I don't have one in my garage and I rely on a local supercharger all the time, or I do tons of road trips or something like that, yeah, I would pay $9.99 a month and secure that lower rate. Probably seems like you'd save the $10 with the lower rate. But again, that's the math you got to do. But yeah, that'll just have to come back later when they fix whatever they need to fix, because it's gone and it might as well not exist right now. And we'll figure it out when they eventually set it live again.
Yeah, I think overall, if this is for, I mean, like we've mentioned 100 times, we're all very open and eager for this to be available for other EVs. Yep. The only con I see coming to this potentially is if you're a Tesla owner and you already are living in an area where superchargings can get pretty like crowded, now you're going to add more cars to that. And you might have a longer wait time.
That's 1,000% my only concern. I've probably mentioned this before. We have chargers here at the building that we're at, and there are lots of Teslas around, people who use the space in this building, but there's also like Nissan Leafs, and there's also Chevy Bolts, and there's also a bunch of plug-in hybrids.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it's always the plug-in hybrids that are plugged in the front of the building. Yeah. When those are the ones that need it the least, theoretically, if you're a battery EV, obviously you can't like just drive away and like, you know, if you have no battery, you have no battery. But it always seems to be the plug-in hybrids that get the spots in the morning. So I wonder, like, if they, the superchargers open up. Like, people who are already getting superchargers that are, like, full or, like, typically have a short wait, does that turn into a really long wait? Because now every EV and maybe even some plug-in hybrids are taking the spots. Don't know yet. Hopefully not too crazy.
I feel like I wouldn't see as many plug-in hybrids in... So a supercharging network feels more like a like gas station to me, where that's somewhere in between your trip. Whereas like at the building here, you may have bought a plug-in EV and you commute close enough to where you're trying not to ever touch gas, right? So like you're trying to get that 20 miles each way.
You're parked all day. You just plug it in the morning. And then when you leave at 5 p.m., you unplug it.
Yeah. And you just never touch your gas, and your gas is for those longer trips. So maybe that wouldn't. I also... One more disclaimer before we go to trivia, just in case this wasn't obvious, I did see a lot of people on Twitter seeing the like 99 cents or the $9.99 and thinking that's really cheap, but that's just for access. You're still paying for the electricity that you use for that charge.
Yeah, just at a somewhat lower rate. We don't know how much lower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much it. We'll probably talk about this eventually again in the future when it sorts itself out.
I think the next time this is like... This is way closer because we actually saw it in the app, but I'm pretty sure the next time we talk about this will be the actual launch. We'll try not to give this the news cycle every single time it gets mentioned, because our whiteboard just erased to zero on days since this was announced. Cool. Trivia.
Yeah, let's get into trivia.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another week of trivia. I decided to tone it down a little bit this week. I'm pretty excited for this first question because it's something we talk about in the office a fair amount. So question number one for this week is, put the following products in chronological order, the order they came out: Google Pay, Google Wallet, and Android Pay.
Is
it fine if I have follow-up questions?
Sure.
Like, because I will.
Yeah, we can get into it. Get in the weeds.
Perfect. I'll have those when we get into trivia answers later. Until then, let's take a break.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome back. I have a Mark Gurman article here, because we always love Mark Gurman articles, about Apple potentially increasing the ads that we're seeing in their software from, like, you know, iOS, iPadOS, Mac, and everything, which I thought was kind of interesting, because we all know Apple as being this company, and they have some really, really good privacy restrictions, including what's it called, where you have to allow...
You can ask apps not to track you.
Yeah, exactly. So they have the Apple like tracking program or whatever for different apps to not be able to sell ads based on all your information.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, recently there was a earnings call where, during that earnings call, Tim Cook specifically mentions out their ads department. And outside of that, the vice president of their ads department said that they want to essentially increase revenue from ads. They basically, they took a hit pretty hard during COVID. And they want, they were right now creating about $4 billion in revenue, but they said they want to hit double digits of that.
Poor Apple.
Yeah, exactly. $4 billion. Right now, the main ads we're seeing on Apple devices are the news app and the stock app. That's just kind of like regular ads you'd expect to see in almost any article-based website. And then like inside the app store, you have the like recommended apps when you're searching something. You can pay for ad placement up there, right? Which at this point already seems like kind of a, you're paying for like a $1,000 phone. And now it's a little weirder when the stock news app and the stock stocks app and your stock.
I guess that is the funny part about like the iPhone experience, which is like some people bought a $1,000 phone, some people bought a $400 phone. They're all getting the exact same software experience though. So yes, it will affect people who spent $1,500 on a phone.
Yeah. And so that's kind of where we're seeing most of this right now. I also, do you pay for News Plus?
I recently unsubscribed.
You recently unsubscribed?
Yeah.
Did you notice you were still getting ads in that, in the subscription-based model?
I unsubscribed because I wasn't using it, so okay. I didn't notice too much, but I believe you.
I would like someone to confirm that for me, but according to the article, there are still ads in the $10 per month that's news thing, but it is fewer than if you weren't paying.
So the thing about, I mean, I pay, what is it, $12.99 a month for YouTube Premium, and there are zero ads, and I'd like to keep it that way. So to pay $10 a month for Apple News, and you still get ads, but it's just a little bit less, that kind of, I kind of just want to pay for zero ads. But Apple wants to make money from ads.
Exactly. So. And I agree with you. I think almost all platforms should be like that. Like, I think a lot of people say Twitter Blue paying $5 a month should eliminate ads from
zero
Twitter.
Ads.
Like, that makes them, I think more people would do Twitter Blue just for that than all the other garbage that they're suggesting in Twitter Blue.
Having a payment tier for slightly less ads, but not zero ads, seems like you have too many ads. That's like a thing that shouldn't need to exist. It either has you pay for zero ads or you don't pay and we support this free content with advertising. But if you have so many ads that people would pay just to have less ads but still have some ads, that seems kind of excessive.
Yeah.
I would rather there be just be zero ads.
We are seeing more and more of that, like Hulu and stuff like that. We have mentioned it before how Netflix might be going a tier down. And like, I kind of understand it. I understand maybe you want to pay less per month and have some ads. It does start getting tricky on where that's going to go, whether that's going to start leaching into the like the full-blown payment tiers of stuff like that. But $10 a month for a news app, I probably shouldn't get any ads in it, I would think.
This is also the most like public company thing I've ever heard, where it's like, we were only making $4 billion a year on ads, and the only way to satisfy our shareholders is to turn that number up. So here we go.
And they want to hit
dollars.
Double digits. That would mean over double, 2.5 times 2.5X. What they're doing right now, which is a lot. So expect to see more ads through your Apple products. I think the one, so in Mark Gurman's article, and we'll link it in the show notes because it has like all the information you could ever want in it and all the speculation. Yeah. But the main speculation I saw was that we would potentially be seeing it in Apple Maps, similar to like how Yelp right now, how Yelp is.
Or Google Maps.
Yeah, pretty much like you think you're getting the right the perfect recommendations for everything, but you can pay for slots to get into more highly recognizable areas of that. Yelp has been that for a long time.
As long as they're crystal clear about which ones are ads, because I always know when I'm searching on Google Maps, like if you're new to an area and you search, you know, sushi, and you pull up the search results and you see that the first three are all ads, I automatically skip those and just go to the top rated ones underneath the ads. So I hope that in Apple Maps, if you're searching for things, you have a very clear distinction of what is an ad and what isn't, because Apple Maps is a free service.
Yes.
So that I think I'm fine with.
I think it's clear to us. I think it's obvious that it's not clear to everyone because of other places we're seeing that happen in, like Yelp, like Google, just regular search. How many people, like you and I, understand that those first three results every single time are going to be recommended or ad or paid for space.
Right.
But the majority of people using stuff like this have no idea, I think.
Dang.
I mean, I've seen family members click those all the time and it.
And they don't know that they're ads?
They don't know they're ads. If I get something where the ad is also the first search product or the first search result under that that I want, I'll make sure I click the bottom search result because like it infuriates me.
I'm not trying to reward the ads. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Well, yeah. No, I can see. I mean, this is the funny thing. When Apple started putting like iCloud ads inside of the settings in the iPhone, you knew that they were pretty serious about subscription revenue and recurring revenue. And that's obviously a shift that they're deciding to make as a company to just bring the numbers up and make a lot of money. Great. So yeah, now that they've opened that faucet a little bit, they realize, oh yeah, subscription revenue and dollars from advertising are a pretty good hand-in-hand combo. Let's just open that faucet completely.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this doesn't surprise me as much as it's going to annoy me.
Exactly. And like in terms of if you're thinking of almost tripling your revenue on that, only adding it to Apple Maps, like where do you think you could see it somewhere else inside the phone? Like we've had Samsung in the past and we've criticized them relentlessly for this because they deserve it, where you're getting in your notification bar like ads for there were ads to upgrade your phone to the for people using the brand new $1,800 like Fold 3 when they first in the first month.
It would feel like such a premium phone and you're like, wow, the performance is so much better and this screen is gorgeous and look how much they redid the software. Everything looks great. And then you get a little pop-down banner ad that's like, get a new Galaxy 20% off. And you're like, what is this? This doesn't belong here. Such an odd, what's the word when two things are an odd...
Juxtaposition.
It's an odd juxtaposition of things. Yeah.
I agree with that. These premium phones, it feels really strange on. And I feel like at a certain point, it shouldn't be there. They're clearly going to want to make more revenue. I think that's obvious to everyone. And that's not just an Apple thing. That's everybody. Like we said, Samsung doesn't as well. Do you think there's any chance? So we've shown off phones in the past, like Infinix, where you are getting an extremely budget phone and you're getting that because of the fact that there are ads on the phone. Now, those are third-party ads. Those aren't first-party, which I guess Apple is still technically serving third. It's third-party people paying Apple to be an Apple ad, which is, I guess, still third-party considered. Do you think we could ever see a reduction in price on any Apple phones as an ad version versus a no-ad version?
Nah.
No. Do you think we could see that in any other phone company that's larger than Infinix? Say Samsung, say Google, something like that.
A cheap ad-supported phone?
Cheaper ad-supported phone. Same phone.
I could see that as a way for some of the lowest price ones to like find a way to break through to a new audience. Like you remember the Amazon Fire Phone? Where they had I'm pretty sure the Amazon phone came out where they had one price for just buying the phone. Then they also had a lower price for, I mean, this is like Kindle, like an ads, and you expect there to be ads in the software, but the phone's cheaper and you know that that's what you're going to deal with. I wouldn't really expect anybody paying more than a few hundred dollars to ever want to deal with that. And saving a few bucks doesn't seem worth it. But it depends on what becomes the norm. Because again, this is Apple we're talking about, and a lot of the bigger companies, when they decide to do something, it just becomes like normal very quickly, and then a lot of people just start to accept it in other phones, and it could happen that way, but hopefully not.
I think that's what this whole article scares me about a little bit, is the more we're seeing Apple do this, and we've already seen Samsung do it. I just want to make sure that this is like not just an Apple thing we're saying they're doing, but like I'm worried about the more and more this is going to start popping up into phones, and more I'm going to feel like I'm watching cable television when I'm on my phone. My notification bar is not safe. Google Maps isn't safe. My default apps aren't safe.
I think this is one of the biggest reasons why I've not gamed very much on my phone, is because so many games are just full of ads. And they almost require you. I was playing a racing game where it's just like, hey, I was just playing the game for a while for just like half an hour of just like going through races and like winning, losing some, upgrading the car, blah, blah, blah. And then at a certain point, it's like you ran out of gasoline. Like you can't even play the game anymore unless you like pay for gas. And it was like, would you like to pay for gas with tokens or by watching an ad? I was like, I already bought the game. Like, let me.
Oh,
just
you
play.
Bought the game and it had.
Yeah, and it was just. It was like you ran out of gasoline. You need some version of getting more gas. I think this is CSR racing or something like that for those who also play.
Someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we mostly have Clash of Clans to thank for stuff like this.
I hate it.
Because they were one of the mobile games that really like brought microtransactions, and My biggest issue with microtransactions is I always prefer the model where it is a free-to-play game that includes microtransactions that don't give you anything extra in the game. They just give you aesthetic properties, whereas then there's like Clash of Clans.
Pay to win type of games.
Pay to win, or even just like pay to advance. Like, you should be on the same playing field no matter what. And then like, you see Riot is a perfect example. They're one of the biggest video game companies out there, and their two main games are free-to-play with only aesthetic benefits. Mm-hmm. And I've spent way too much money on both of those games.
Just because you want the aesthetics.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, I just looked it up. CSR Racing is free. So this is, it is definitely more along the lines of pay to play and also a little bit of pay to accelerate how good you get at it. Because it's just literally modifying a car. So, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. The world of advertising is obviously very complicated. It's how our business works, but it's how a lot of businesses work too. Yes, so
it's hard for us to throw stones when we have that.
Not casting stones, just like, hey, I think that's what it comes down to, is our videos are free and ad supported. But if you pay for a product like a phone and then continue to get more ads, it feels a little worse.
Yeah, I think the thing that's really throwing me is the fact that it's like it's a default app that comes on the phone that is then you have
built in.
And also, like, there is a little bit of a weird aspect of that. Like, Apple has done the program where you can eliminate being able to get tracked and get sold ads, where a lot of companies, big and small, have claimed revenue loss because of that.
Well, you'll still get ads. They'll just be worse.
They're worse, but that also means the companies selling those ads are getting far, far less money. So it's putting a big hit onto them, and then Apple's swooping in now and saying, like, We got that. Let's take that ourselves. Which I guess if you're the one controlling it, good for you. They're really taking over everything though in their ecosystem.
They're gonna make so much money.
It's gonna be wild. How long do you think before they hit that goal? Let's say they just add it to Maps, and they'll also start making some more with like Apple TV Plus and stuff like that, because they just recently started it with Major League Baseball. They're now running the ads on that.
Yeah, they'll do it in a year and a half. I think they'll get there. I think they'll get their $10 trillion bazillion dollars that they need. We'll see though. We'll see. I'm looking forward to, so iPhones 14, 14 Max, 14 Pro, 14 Pro Max, they're all coming out, assuming in about a month, basically. We're actually pretty close.
We're getting really close.
It's already August, mid-August right now. So we expect those in mid-September. So that keynote might be pretty revealing about some of the new services.
That's a really good
as well
point. How do you think they could potentially, like, you know, Apple's not going to come out at the keynote and being like, we're increasing your ads. It's going to be like,
oh no,
we're personalizing recommendations in your default apps.
How will they spin it, you're saying?
Yeah. What's the spin going to be? Fantastic.
Yeah, they'll find a way to say, like, we're going to find new ways to recommend you apps and games you've never heard of and seen before. And also, this isn't even like when they're at WWDC and they're talking to developers specifically are people who want their apps and games to be seen by more people, and they want to make more money from their apps and games. So in a keynote for WWDC, they could be a little bit more direct about, like, we want to help you reach new audiences and increase revenue. But the iPhone keynote is just talking to everyone buying an iPhone. That's, they would never say that. They would want to say something very positive and spinny, and I'm sure they're already writing it. Allegedly, it's already in production. I think that's probably not a surprise.
Production, the keynote for is in production?
For the keynote video, which I guess is, so they're doing some in-person events, and they're doing some, I guess I went to one in-person event, WWDC, but it was a recording, and we all went to the event to watch the recording. Mm-hmm. So they're still doing this big recording and then playing it back on stage. I don't know what the September event's going to be. It might be the same thing. But yeah, who knows? Allegedly, they're recording something now.
Do you know where you heard that from? I've never thought about how far in advance they do it.
I think Twitter somewhere. I wish I remember. I'm surprised save the tweet.
We don't see more leaks from the early productions of live stuff like
that. I'm sure that is the most tightly guarded production ever, because Apple has their own internal production.
But we're also not seeing it from like when Samsung's been doing it either. Or I guess they're doing more live? No, they're still doing recorded.
They're doing recorded stuff. but they record it like indoors. Like nobody has to see them outside. Like if they tried to do something like in Times Square, like here's a new Samsung Galaxy, somebody would record it from the street.
Yeah.
But this is all like super inside protected stuff. So it never leaks. The presentation never leaks and the products already never leak. That's not true. Ask Google. But
that's
like the presentations.
And, like all these secretly guarded products get like leaked all the time.
But get leaked outside of them, like recording videos. Those get leaked in other parts of the supply chain on their way to the stores, on their way to the whatever, getting tested. But the actual presentation, which is curiously probably the stuff that I'm most interested in seeing.
I want to see the behind the scenes.
I really want to see behind the scenes. I want to see the edit bay, like where they edit those things, where they're putting together all those graphics and those transitions, which have like a combination of like 3D and practical and like the tours around Apple campus through drone shots. How much of that is a drone?
Does Media Arts Lab make the Apple keynote films? Do you think they have them do that? Or do you think that's like just their ad campaigns?
I think, well, that's a good question. It could just all, I imagine it's all internal Apple teams.
Right.
And they have their own production team who is probably working on all that stuff.
Right.
But okay. I don't think they'll ever tell us or tell me.
I think they would tell you and they would tell anyone else.
Well, the thing is we will never be able to see that because of all the like embargoed stuff that is in the production. So like while they would potentially be willing to like invite somebody to actually see how it's made behind the scenes, it's giving up way too much information way too early. So that will never happen.
Well, what if they let us record, like show the behind the scenes process of making one of those keynotes, but then everything is embargoed until the keynote? That would be amazing.
It would be incredible. And if you're listening, Apple, we would love to do that.
That would actually be the sickest behind the scenes ever.
I feel like with Apple, we find out information from them the latest out of everybody, and they still might not want you to even know any information that's being said.
But like, do you really want to see the behind the scenes of like, you saw the Samsung presentation?
Oh, no, I don't care at all.
Like, it's not as good.
No,
I want to
exactly.
see the amazing production that they put together. I want to see how they make that.
I think they're just worried about the information that's in that production.
I mean, embargoes are pretty good. Somebody would do it eventually.
Hopefully.
They'll soften up a little bit. We'll soften them up a little bit. Give a little behind the scenes. Maybe someday. Anyway, we got to take a break. We'll talk about the Pixel 6a in a second and also Android 13. But until then, trivia time.
All right, this trivia question is dedicated to all the Garden Staters in the audience. Reconstituted discs of New Jersey breakfast pork are commonly and correctly referred to as...
You want to fight?
I think we're going to disagree on this one. I think we've called it different things.
I mean, we'll explain later.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Later at the trivia answers.
We'll get there. All right, be right back.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prof G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right. Welcome back. Let's talk about Android 13 on the Pixel 6. This was, so far, a pleasant surprise.
Okay.
So, actually, this sort of developed for a while. So, David and I were keeping an eye on the Android 13 betas. We always look at the newest versions of iOS and Android when they come out and sort of put together a top features list as they get, like, developed as they go through beta. iOS 1, that happened already. Android came out in beta. There wasn't really enough new stuff in the first beta to do a video on the new features, so we waited. And then another beta came out, and there wasn't really new stuff there, so we kept waiting. Then another beta came out, and there wasn't really enough new stuff there. And then it just dropped early, AOSP, before the Pixel 7. Usually you have to wait till the new phone to get like the stable new version of Android. This week we just got Android 13. Now, you'll only get it on a couple Pixels, the newest phones. I flashed it on my Pixel 6 Pro. Flashing it does wipe the phone, so maybe there's a little extra benefit to me wiping my phone and setting it up from scratch.
Sure.
But I have now been using Android 13 on the Pixel 6 Pro for a solid 24 hours, and it's been very good. That's usually how it starts for me. It usually starts very good. But I did a video on the new features, and there is some pretty cool stuff. Definitely watch the video. I think one of the most interesting ones is apparently this is one of the most requested features of Android for the past couple of years, which is app-specific languages. So if you are bilingual, if you speak two languages, but maybe you only use one language in a certain app, one or two apps that you use, maybe it's like WhatsApp or like a you have a family group chat and another app or something like that that's just another language over there, and you don't want to have to change the entire system language to properly use the app and the keyboard in that app, you can now go into the system settings and switch over just one app to a different language. And it will change everything about the app to the new language. And you can just work in one language in a certain app. That's pretty sick. There's a bunch of other little features like that all sprinkled throughout Android 13. I think most of the changes are bug fixes. Like, it feels like Android 12.1 or 12.2 to me, which is fine. That's it kind of
sounds
like
fantastic.
Yeah, it's what Android 12 like would have been nice if it was when it came out. A little more stable, a little less bugs. It's been smooth for me, no problems. But again, I'm going to have to keep my eye on it because, you know, this is how Pixels usually start out for me. But it's really good. There are way more wallpaper customization settings. There's like 16 different color options now. My disappointment on the home screen is to see the themed icons thing.
I've seen a lot of Twitter posts about
this. So when that first came out, it was just Google Apps. So if you check that box, it themes all of your Google Apps on your home screen to be like monochromatic to match your custom colors.
Mm-hmm.
And in this new version of Android 13, it was supposed to be able to theme like everything. I checked the box, it definitely doesn't theme everything.
That's a lofty goal.
Yeah, so it's still like, and I have some pretty common apps, Spotify, Instagram, they don't theme those. Like, there's a lot of apps that don't get themed.
That's what I found really interesting. I think Daniel Bader posted a picture of his home screen, and looking at it, it looks terrible because like he had maybe 12 apps on his home screen and probably four of them weren't matching with the rest of them. But it seemed like the four that weren't matching were, like you said, Spotify, but then he had some other apps that I never heard of before. So it's really weird that the super general ones aren't getting skinned, where some like totally small scale programs I've never heard of
are. It is truly a head scratching combination. Like, a lot of the Google apps, not all of the Google apps, but most, if not all, of the Google apps are all like skinned, like YouTube, Google Drive, Photos, all that stuff. But like Google Wallet isn't skinned for some reason. And then Instagram and Spotify aren't skinned. But you know what is? Relay Pro.
Really?
And like a couple other
third party Reddit app?
Yeah. That one's skinned for some reason. And Pocket Cast, my podcast app. Like, that, it doesn't really make a lot of sense which ones are versus aren't skinned.
And so my biggest problem with that is, unless you happen to have a home screen that only uses skinned apps, it feels like I would never turn that on if it weren't all of them on my home screen, because it would look so bad.
I was really looking forward to being able to flip the switch and just have like a nice, clean, monochrome home screen. But the dream is dead. It doesn't work. But yeah, Android 13 looks good. A lot of smooth stuff, a lot of good features in here. Worth checking out the video on my top five.
I'm very interested, mostly in the fact that you said it feels like a lot of bug fixes, because I am still using my Pixel 6. I am increasingly still having more and more bugs. I think I've mentioned a lot of them.
You have the
I have a screenshot here that I just showed you a second ago, but it is like, it is hilarious to me. I think I've mentioned before how my search bar on my home screen will, despite always being forced dark mode on my phone, every once in a while, and happening probably two or three times a week now, will turn to light mode. And I've said, it's just annoying. It's mostly an issue when I'm trying in the dark and now I get a white screen.
Yeah.
So it happened to me the other day. I searched in light mode and then the result came in. I don't know if you can see this. We can put a screenshot of the phone. But if you're an audio listener, the top part where it says Google in the search bar is the light mode. The bottom part with like your share and discover and search is light mode. But the middle results are all dark mode.
It's weird.
It was really strange. It's just like another weird thing that happens that you like, that's noticeable. That's just something that feels like it's constantly going wrong. So I hope there's some bug fixes because I have a lot.
So do you have the download pending or no?
I don't know. Did you also see, I can check right now, but did you see how apparently some of these, some of the over-the-air updates for this were actually just putting people, giving people Android 12 downloads, like full 2 gig downloads to just put Android 12 on their phone when they already had Android 12.
I thought that was fascinating. Very odd.
Funny.
I did flash it like manually, so mm-hmm. I didn't wait for the over-the-air update, but it worked out for me. Obviously, that was a little more foolproof, but it wiped my phone.
I do not have the update right now, but now that you've used it for 24 hours, do you think it's worth doing the update right away, or would you recommend most people wait?
No, I'd say update. Okay. Update. It's because it's again, if it was like some huge thing, like a bunch of UI changes and a bunch of crazy features, and maybe some of them weren't stable yet, I would say wait. But this really is like Android 12.2. It's a lot of fixes and a lot of improvements. They moved the settings in the quick settings down. See, you know how it's typically right here in the middle?
Yeah.
They got it down there in the corner where it's a little more reachable. A little power button down there. So I think that's good. I think a lot of good changes.
One last question on that. Do you think this could potentially be dropping it early to have more people using it and maybe get a couple bug fixes out of 13 before they launch it with Pixel 7? Because one of the big things that really hurt Pixel 6 was the bugs that came with Android 12 with that.
Yeah, it is odd that it launched early. That mm-hmm. is an interesting theory. If it is their intent, I think it'll work. Because they now have a month of some early Pixel adopters and some bug reports to like really lock up Pixel 7's experience before it comes out and then go super hard with Pixel 7. I can see that. Yeah.
I think that's a really good idea, honestly. Not bad. You get that and you get to just build a little bit of hype potentially a month or two before the release. And then they're not going to do an event showing it off. They're going to do it at the event anyways. So why not build a little hype behind it?
The clipboard stuff is cool. I think a lot of the features too, if you read up on Android 13, are tablet focused, and which basically keeps reminding me, oh yeah, right. They did announce that they're going to have a tablet coming out in like next year sometime, including universal copy and paste between the phone and the tablet, which already exists for some other phones, but it'll be built into Android. So that'll be cool. But yeah, whenever the Pixel tablet comes out, that'll have a bunch of cool features too.
With the Roadster?
Yeah, exactly.
Did you see the couple people found out that on their Pixel 6a, you could unlock 90 hertz?
Yeah, people were tweeting this at me. Well, first of all, okay, my big complaint, I'm putting this in air quotes. I think the Pixel 6a is a really good phone. Mm-hmm. My biggest notable downfall of the Pixel 6a when you compare it to other phones in this price range is, well, this one's still 60 hertz. So while it is fast, it isn't as smooth because that higher refresh rate helps it feel smoother. A lot of people fired right back at me for that. How could you all, 60 hertz is plenty. Yeah, obviously, lots of phones are 60 hertz still, but if you're going to be buying a new phone, most new phones for $500-ish will give you a higher refresh rate. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's 90, sometimes it's 120, and as someone who has used a lot of phones, it's something I really think is worth getting at that price. So I noted that about Pixel 6a, but now with this headline, a lot of people were sending this at me because apparently this was an intentional choice by Google. Now knowing that the panel that they're using actually does support 90 hertz, potentially even 120 hertz.
It's confusing.
So it's a nice flat 1080p OLED display that is capable of running theoretically at 90 hertz mm-hmm. and refreshing at 90 hertz. But Google is locking everything with the Pixel 6a at 60 hertz.
Yeah. From everything I read is like there's quite a few people who did this, and it seems like a total pain in the neck if you actually want to do it. Very hacky way to do it.
Yeah.
But there are people who are getting 90 hertz out of their screens. They're running multiple benchmarks to show that it's 90 hertz and showing videos and pictures of it, which is also kind of hard to confirm. But I think enough people have done it where it seems like it's totally believable that this is happening. But
this is so funny because it's like it's clearly not the same group of people. But it is really funny hearing people get mad that I called out the 60 hertz on the Pixel 6a. And then theoretically, a bunch of the same people are going, but look, it can do 90 hertz. I thought that didn't matter to you. Yeah. I thought you didn't care about 90 hertz. Oh, you do care about 90 hertz. Oh, okay, well, yeah. You can also buy a Pixel 6, by the way.
Yeah.
If you really want 90 hertz.
Yeah, from everything that I read of what you have to do, it seems crazy hacky. It seems like it comes with a lot of problems. There's some people have like crazy green tint on it because the phone's then not calibrated for like the new like how it's seeing the screen. And then also a lot of people were saying that they were doing it, and then when they would get the new option that says like smooth display, and when they would turn that on, the screen would just go black. So I would like highly, highly not recommend doing this to your phone. I think you need to be pretty like an expert or like pretty experienced to be able to do it, but it probably shouldn't be done. I'm sure Google kept it at 90 for a reason. I don't think they're trying to hide all that much from you. It probably just makes more sense at 60.
I'm also pretty sure this won't be the first or last phone that has a display that is technically capable of a higher refresh rate that is locked at 60.
I did see mention in here that apparently there was an Asus phone at one point that it was advertised as 120, but you could unlock it to 160, I think.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, sure.
But yeah.
Yeah. So my continued rampage against 60 hertz phones, including all of the iPhones that are super expensive and don't have higher refresh rate, will probably not end anytime soon. So
fair.
Yeah, but it is kind of interesting seeing that this was an intentional choice. I will say this is one of the questions we have at the end. Like, if how many extra points would you give the Pixel 6, say, if it had a higher refresh rate out the box? I wonder how much it would affect, you know, things like battery life mm-hmm. and overall efficiency of the phone. Google probably made that calculus already, which is why they landed on what they decided to land on. But we'll see what Pixel 7's lineup looks like. I'm gonna be very curious about that lineup. The pricing, the phones, the features that they launch with, how they follow up Pixel 6 with a Pixel 7 and a Pixel 7 Pro, and then waiting a few months, and then a theoretical Pixel 7a. What does that choice look like for Google? We'll see. But yeah, I think that's it.
I'm still so hard in the group. I really think they should just release all three at the same time.
I wouldn't be mad at all. But like also the iPhone SE is like mid-cycle. Even the Nord for OnePlus is mid-cycle. Like they don't.
Yeah, but don't follow what OnePlus does. I would try and do the opposite of what Plus.
That's fair.
What OnePlus does. So.
Totally fair.
Okay.
Well, we'll leave it at that.
Trivia answers. I feel like there just could be a potential. I feel optimistic today, which probably means I'll get everything wrong.
All right, let's wrap up this beautiful day of trivia. All right, so question number one was, put the following Google products in chronological order.
Mm-hmm.
Google Pay, mm-hmm. Google Wallet, and Android Pay.
Now, does it matter who goes first? Do we know? I kind of have my logic.
I mean, I have one with, we are working on a different way of doing this. We will continue to do it how we are right now. Yeah. It'll take where we want to make it fun, but
I can talk through my logic.
Okay.
Of what I think the answer is.
Do you want me to just say mine off the top?
If you want.
Because
sure.
I have no logic with
okay.
it.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
I reverse what you said. So Pay, Wallet, Android Pay, Google Wallet, Google Pay is my answer.
I'm close. I think Android Pay, this is hilarious because they're all so basically the same thing. But Android Pay, I believe, was first because there was Apple Pay, there was Samsung Pay. I think that's just the first thing that they called it.
Okay.
And I know that Google Wallet is the newest version that encompasses what used to be the Pay service. So I think it's Android Pay, Google Pay, Google Wallet. No, isn't Pay the new one? Wait, what's on my phone? I'm gonna check.
I looked right now, so I can't.
This is too funny.
So I waited till after I gave my answer and looked.
I guess I don't have it on my phone.
What? You have a Pixel.
Wait, yeah. Come down from the top. Here we go. Where's my wallet? Is it wallet or pay? It doesn't show up.
This is what
I have. Did it show up for you?
This is what I have.
What do you have? GPay? Google Pay. So Google Pay.
I'll accept GPay and Google Pay as being the...
Okay.
Well, and then it says welcome
Wait,
to Google Pay.
Wait, you have GPay on your phone?
It says GPay, and then it's called. It says welcome to Google Pay.
But my Pixel says show access to wallet from lock screen.
Does it really?
Yeah.
What version of Android are you on?
12.
You're on 12.
Wait, no, I have a wallet also. Wait. Okay, now
it.
I'm very confused. Yep, right, I'm glad I went
with
no logic.
I think my logic is the wallet includes Pay. Because Pay is the service that you can use to like pay for Google Play services or like pay for Google subscriptions and things like that inside apps. And
then,
so the wallet includes Google Pay, but it also includes other cards.
And gives you like the cards you can pay with like Tap to Pay.
With Tap to Pay and things
I
like that.
I think you're right on
so
that.
So I think it's...
Judging by Ellis's reaction to seeing I had GPay, I'm pretty sure you're right on that.
Okay,
so...
Sure.
Okay, so Marquez, you're really close. I think close enough for points.
I'll take the points.
So you're right. Android Pay came out in 2015. Uh-huh. Then Google Pay came out in 2018. And then they both got... combined into Google Wallet in 2022.
Yeah.
The part that you left out is that in 2011, Google put out a product called Google Wallet.
Oh,
so there are two Google Wallets.
Oh,
Google Wallet and Android Pay got merged into Google Pay in 2018. And then both of those got renamed to Google Wallet in this year.
I remember David ranting about this. At some point.
This question took so long to research to find
just
the answer.
Aloe, just duo me. So aloe and duo.
Is the real answer to this?
The real answer is Google Wallet, Android Pay, Google Pay, and then Google,
and then Google Wallet
again.
So you have one, I have to use one twice.
That's crazy.
But I feel like you're close.
I was like 75%.
Yeah, I feel like maybe Adam will disagree, but he's not here, so I'm giving you.
We did it. We did a thing before where like the closest one would get the points. So I
think you should. You can get. Whatever. You should get the point.
All right, but now the real heater of
now
a question.
The real tech question. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Reconstituted discs of New Jersey breakfast pork are commonly and correctly referred to as.
I'm gonna not get the points, but stand by Taylor Ham.
I'm not
gonna get the points.
I respect the decision.
But I'm standing by it.
It's pork roll.
It is pork roll.
Yes. Incorrect. It's Taylor Ham. Sorry. I have enough anecdotal evidence.
There needs to be somewhat of an... can you explain a little bit? Because this is ultra-regional.
Okay. I went to school in Hoboken, and there is a really, really nice bagel shop on the corner of 7th and Washington, I believe, on my way to campus.
Uh-huh.
And anytime I went in there, I got a Taylor Ham egg and cheese, and that's what it said on the board, and it's Hoboken, and it's a bagel shop, and it's just like whatever they say, all right? So that's where I got it. And then I moved, and I also had a bagel shop near me when I moved, and they also... I guess I didn't ask for pork roll, but I got a Taylor Ham egg and cheese every time, and they made it exactly how I wanted it, and that's just what I call it.
Yeah, yeah. To explain, if you didn't get what it was by reconstitute pork disc, it's a breakfast meat, pretty
it's
much
meat.
Similar to like Canadian bacon, a little fattier, a little more processed. I think
it's like the hot dog of Canadian bacon.
If a hot dog was a breakfast disc, that's what it
funny.
Is. We love it in New Jersey. It's ultra regional, like you can probably find it in Philly and New York City, but like it's very, very common in New Jersey. And it is like there are two arguments in New Jersey, and that is, which we had during the break, to say for a very long time. This is gonna be a long episode to edit, but is it pork roll or Taylor Ham? What is the name of it? So Taylor Ham is the company and pork roll is what it's called.
Interesting.
And then is there a Central Jersey or not? Which is like
we'll
spare you that.
It's like Kleenex and tissue. It's like
exactly.
It's all a
Band-Aid
tissue.
And bandage. Yeah.
But you better be eating Taylor Ham branded.
North Jersey calls it Taylor Ham. South Jersey calls it pork roll.
That makes sense.
Is generally the
and Central Jersey calls it what?
With that, thank you for tuning into Waveform this week. We appreciate everything. We'll catch you guys next week. Getting busy soon.
It's real soon.
It's real. It's like nervously soon.
We're kind of already in it, actually.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Cool. See you next week. Waveform is produced by Adam Molina and Ellis Roven. We are partnered with Vox Media Podcast Network, and our intro outro music was created by Vane Sill.